Take a Deeper Dive with Steve Barkley in one of his five books. Available in electronic and printed formats, add Steve's books to your district's resources or to your personal collection at barkleypd.com/books.
Hello and welcome to the Steve Barkley Ponders Out Loud podcast. For the last 35 years, I've had the opportunity to learn with educators at all levels, both nationally and internationally. In each of the coming episodes, I'll explore my thoughts and my learning on a variety of topics connected to teaching, learning, and leading. Thanks for listening in. Choosing your words while coaching. While reading an article written by Steve Martin, the author of the book, Yes, 50 Secrets from the Science of Persuasion, I was reinforced on the thinking that I've done across the years about certain words that I choose to use or not use while coaching. Martin writes that a simple statement like having people consider traveling north or south, people tend to identify traveling north as more difficult because we somehow process in the mind that north is uphill. Another example he shared was that after people watch a videotape of one car hitting another car, they are asked to predict the speed of the car that was at fault. If the question is posed, how fast was the car going when it bumped into the other car, people estimate a lower speed than if the question was asked, how fast was the car going when it smashed into the other car? Replacing the word smashed with bumped has people interpret the visual image that they saw differently. So think about the impact that choosing to use certain words or to avoid certain words might have in your coaching work. One of the terms that I've chosen to avoid in my coaching is use of the word help. I avoid using the word help unless the person that I'm coaching first uses the word with me. In other words, if I'm approached by a teacher who says, Steve, would you help me with this? I'll come back and use the word help. But if the teacher hasn't used the word help, I refrain from using the term. Jim Knight, writing in Unmistakable Impact, a partnership approach for dramatically improving instruction, talks about five simple truths connected to helping. I think as you listen through Jim's statements here, it reinforces for me my use of finding a different approach than using the word help. Jim states, people often do not know that they need help. So a common experience then is as a coach, asking a person what help you can provide doesn't provide a lot of reflective thinking on their part. So taking questions that are more reflective and having the teacher identify something that they want to make happen and then talk about that piece that they want to make happen. Second, Jim states, if people feel one down, they will resist help. So just the presence of the word help, if I say to you, how can I help, can suggest to some people that I'm on a level above them, looking to reach down and pull them up, rather than a partnership that has me working alongside of them. That's why my tendency in a pre-conference, rather than to use the word, how can I help, I might come back and ask the teacher, what role might I play during the observation. The third item that Jim states is that criticism is taken personally. So if I approach a teacher and suggesting, having observed in your classroom, here's how I think I can help, I'm likely to be having a negative impact from that statement onto the teacher's pride or ego, which now interferes with the thinking I'm looking to have the teacher do during the whole coaching, conferencing, reflective conversation. The fourth item Jim states is, if someone else does the thinking for them, people will resist. So again, if I'm coming and offering, here's how I can help, I haven't taken the teacher through doing the identification, analysis, and problem solving that's most likely to impact the teacher's learning. And Jim's last statement is that people aren't motivated by other people's goals. So the coach arriving at the concept of help to be offered isn't being driven, doesn't have the coachee, the teacher, being driven by his or her own picture of the goal of what they want to accomplish with their instruction. I tend to avoid using the words problem or struggle in my conferencing with a teacher. My sense is that if I label something as a struggle or a problem, the teacher has the tendency to read that in an evaluative mode. In other words, if I said, I noticed you struggling to get the students focused, the teacher can interpret that as my making a negative evaluation. Asking the teacher to describe a problem they're having suggest I'm asking the teacher to admit perhaps to a weakness. So my tendency instead of those phrases is to ask the teacher to talk about a spot in the lesson where what she saw as she observed the students was not the predicted behavior she was looking for as she thought through the planning, or to describe a spot in the lesson, and I'll frequently precede this by doing the positive first, describe a spot in the lesson where you were most pleased by the student learning behaviors you observed. And as the teacher talks about that, I may then come back and ask, is there a spot in the lesson where you would have liked to have seen a different student behavior reaction than the one that you were seeing? If the teacher, again, comes back using the words, if the teacher says, well, I'm struggling with this, or the teacher says, I'm defining the problem as this, then I'm comfortable coming back and using vocabulary that the teacher has used with me. Three other words that I look to avoid are the words but, however, and yet. These words are often used to connect two thoughts. And most frequently, the first thought is generally a positive or agreeing statement you're looking to make to a person, such as the activity you use raised lots of student energy and enthusiasm. The second statement is often an additional idea that you're looking for the other person to consider. In this case, it could be the activity took a lot of time and not everyone understood the purpose. As soon as you take two statements, a positive and a negative, and you connect them, with one of those words, but, however, or yet, the tendency is for that second negative statement to wipe out the power of the first positive one you delivered. So in this case, the teacher really doesn't process your statement that the activity raised lots of energy and enthusiasm for the kids. That really is a positive. So most of the time, I look to make that positive statement and then stop and have the teacher respond to it. Because generally it's in the response from the teacher that I now know that the positive element was heard. I also know how the teacher interpreted it. If the teacher didn't read the positiveness in it, I might decide to be going in a different direction before I give the feedback or the data of a less than positive element that I observed. If I am going to use the two statements together, my tendency will be then to replace those words of but, however, or yet with either a period or the word and. So in this case, the statement to the teacher, the activity raised lots of positive energy from the kids, my tendency would probably be to come back on this, put a period, and then come back with a question, what did you observe? And the teacher's, that question, what did you observe, might actually take the teacher into pointing out some student behaviors or student lack of understanding and walk me as a coach right into the conversation. If the teacher's comments don't take me there, then one of the things I'm likely to be considering is whether or not the teacher observed what I observed. And again, that chance to read the teacher influences how I would come back to share information with the teacher. When looking to bring an idea onto the table, this would be something that would more naturally happening in a post-conference, I've learned to avoid using an entry point such as, have you thought about, or have you tried? These are close-ended questions which can have an impact of cornering the responder. If I'm asked, have you tried having the students work on this in groups? And I haven't tried it, I have to say no. And then I feel like I need to defend my reason for not having tried that if I'm not interested. Or maybe I did try it and it didn't go well, so now I'm kind of cornered to have to confess my failure with it. If you come to me with the statements, have you thought about, it's really a statement that says I should have. So what I've learned to do to avoid those kinds of questions is to go with a more open-ended approach. So in this case, I might say to the teacher, as I was observing, I wondered what the impact of doing that task in a group or a pair might be. Or how do you think the outcome would change if students paired to do the activity? And now in this open approach, the teacher can discuss their thinking. They can share with me their past experiences if they'd like to. But it has that less push, that less demand than the close-ended question contains. I have found that the best place to look for words to use are by listening to the teacher's language and descriptions. So I'm big in my pre-conference with teachers taking notes where I'm recording the actual words the teacher uses. So if the teacher is calling an activity a collaborative activity or a grouping activity or a think, pair, share activity, my strategy is to come back and use the teacher's actual words. I've kind of captured this phrase that coaches use the language of the teacher. Evaluators use the language of the system. So evaluators are likely to come back and use the descriptive words that are in the evaluation process, or they're in the program that the district is implementing or following. As a coach, I've learned I get much more acceptance and openness from the teacher if I use the teacher's words back. I recall a coach sharing with me when I brought up this example that a teacher mentioned to her that as she went into an activity, she was going to be posting several words on the cabinet that she was introducing so that the students would be able to use those words in their upcoming conversations and writing. And the coach turned back to the teacher and said, so you'll be using a word wall? And the teacher responded back, no, I'm putting words on the cabinet. Is that okay with you? In other words, the teacher's interpretation when the coach switched that language was that their conversation became more supervisory. I recently came upon this quote, and I thought it might fit here as a closeout. It's listed as unknown as to where the quote comes from, but it's stated thusly, quote, words are seeds that do more than blow around. They land in our hearts and nut the ground. Be careful what you plant and careful what you say. You might have to eat what you planted one day. Thanks for listening in.
Thanks for listening, folks. I'd love to hear what you're pondering. You can find me on Twitter at Steve Barkley, or send me your questions and find my videos and blogs at barkleypd.com.